Welcome to Startup Success, the podcast for startup founders and investors. Here, you'll find stories of success from others in the trenches as they work to scale some of the fastest growing startups in the world. Stories that will help you in your own journey. Startup Success starts now.
Welcome to Startup Success. Today, we have a very respected and admired startup entrepreneur and founder with us today on the show, Majal Shah. And we're so excited you're here. Welcome and thank you.
Thank you for having me.
So I know you're with Health IQ. You founded it a while ago, and I really want to get into that and what Health IQ is up to. But first, I want to talk a little bit about some of your past success, because we have so many startup founders in our community that that's their dream, right? So the purchase by Google, the other purchase. So if you want to, could you just share a little bit about what kind of has happened in your past? And if I could ask you some questions about it, that would be great.
Sure. Yeah. So I started my first company in 1999. It was called Ondelay. And we made selling faster on marketplaces like eBay and Amazon Marketplace at the time. And started that company when I was 26 years old. We sold it in about 5 years later in 2004. It was a bit of a complicated exit, but eventually it got bought by Alibaba. And, you know, learned a ton, went through good times, bad times, you know, 2000, 2001 in the internet space was not an easy time. No. And so we went through all that and then eventually kind of made it out the other side. And then started my second company in 2005, which eventually became called Like.com. And this was a visual search engine. So we used computer vision to search inside of photographs, looking at the color, shape, and pattern. Realized it was a great technology to apply for shopping for aesthetic items like handbags and shoes and jewelry, and turned it into a shopping engine that we sold to Google in 2010. And it was like, I think Google's 10th largest acquisition at the time that they had done by dollars. And so, you know, those were my kind of first two entrepreneurial experiences. And then after a brief time at Google, I ended up starting my third, which is Health IQ. And so each of them has kind of a different flavor, and I'm happy to kind of take you through them. But it's, you know, I kind of always knew I would be an entrepreneur, but it's, you know, it's now been basically about 20 years of doing one startup or another.
It's incredible. And I remember reading about Like.com at the time, and what struck me was how you switched gears, how you changed, because that's not what the technology was originally developed for, right?
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Yeah. You know, I have a saying, I'm more interested in being successful than in being right. And that is the foundational belief you have to have, I think, to be a great entrepreneur, which is that, you know, we all have a theory of what our company is going to be or what the product's going to be. And sometimes you're right and it works, and sometimes you're not. And in the case of Like.com, we started out with this idea of, okay, look, there's technology we can bring that can search inside of photographs. And lots of people had just gotten digital cameras at the time. This is, if you remember, kind of 2005, 2006, and people were starting to take them, and cell phone cameras were starting to get decent. And so I said, you know, what a great idea to search inside of photographs. But our first thought was, oh, we search for faces and do face recognition and use it to organize your personal photos. And we launched a service called Ria. And we thought, oh, this is great. And people loved it. I mean, I remember TechCrunch wrote the really glowing review on it. And we actually did a launch party in Michael Arrington's backyard. And we were like the fifth article ever written on TechCrunch. And I mean, it was like this whole thing where we suddenly emerged. And then we looked at the data, and it was like people would use it and upload their photos and organize it, and then they'd never come back. I was like,
so it was sobering data.
Yeah, it was. And people were like, this is the greatest thing. And everybody's talking about it. And the blogosphere just thought we were the, you know, cat's meow. And then I said, you know, we've got to change this. And I remember it was very hard because everybody was like, people think this is great. Like, why are we changing it? But again, the data said we needed to change. And everybody pivots their company. It's just that most people pivot when they're down to like no money left. And then it's
right.
too late to
then
pivot.
Then you have to, right.
Money. Right. Yeah. Like everybody's like, oh, I'm like, everybody pivots. Don't get me wrong. That's not the unique part. It's pivoting early that's the unique part. And I think that what that was the realization, which was, you know, this isn't working. let's apply it. And then actually one of our users said it. They said, you know, why don't you apply this to shopping? Because I search the internet all the time and I'd love to upload a photograph of something and then have you find me things that look similar that I can buy. And that's where we then said, oh, let's take the same technology but apply it to shopping. And we said, well, you don't need it to shop for a computer. You just type in the serial number you're looking for. You need it for something that's aesthetic, that's hard to describe, and, you know, linguistically hard to describe. And that's where we stumbled upon the idea of a shopping search engine for fashion using this technology. And then that took off. And then, of course, Google thought it would be a great technology to add to Google Shopping, and kind of the rest, you know, the rest of that's history. So, you know, even Health IQ, we started out as a quiz. We actually, the original idea was a FICO score for health using blood tests to calculate your score. And then we're this isn't going to work. And we ended up building the Health IQ test. And then lots of people took it, but it still wasn't a business. It was just a test.
Right.
And then we pivoted that to doing it for life insurance and realizing, oh, if you can pass the Health IQ test, you're health conscious and you probably have a lower risk. And so we turned it into a life insurance company. And then more recently have now realized that actually health conscious people, you know, which we knew, but we just couldn't figure out how to do it. We built the same thing for Medicare insurance, something called Medicare Supplement. And we did the same thing for auto insurance, because it turns out most seniors, are dementia is actually the major cause of senior accidents. And if you're health conscious, you have less dementia because, you know, so one of the things I found is you just keep moving until you find water. Mm-hmm. And even if you find water, if you can find even better water, bigger body of water, you move to that. And you just can never get locked in, you know, in terms of being so focused that this is the idea the market wants. Like I used to tell people, I said, if an investor tells you it's not a good idea, it doesn't matter.
Oh.
Like, don't listen to it. Because investors, you know, you'll get all kinds of opinions. And if you just blow with the wind, like, you'll just be a plastic bag in the wind. Like, this isn't going to work. But if a customer tells you, then, or if enough customers tell you, then you do need to change. And I think that's the divining rod I've always used.
That, I mean, I'm glad we're recording this because this is like the best advice. There's so many things you said in there that are like nuggets. You know, first, don't pivot when you're out of cash, but earlier on the data, and you talked about the data and you just said what customers say. Is that kind of the primary data that has led you on these successful pivots?
Yeah, I mean, customers say, or just, you know, in the pivot to life insurance, a lot of it was regulatory for Health IQ. Like, we needed to understand where could you make a different price, because not in all, you know, it's not all insurances where you're allowed to price differently. So sometimes it's pivoting to where the customers say. Sometimes the customers always, you know, health conscious people always want a lower price. Mm-hmm. It's just that in some product lines, you're allowed to by law to do it, and some you're not. So there's different reasons to pick different things. But in general, you know, I think that you always want to find the most fertile ground to put your business in. I think so many of us choose a business sector that you know, mm-hmm. or you came from, or your last job was in. But, you know, it's like there are some places where the land is just desert, and no matter how hard you work, like, nothing's going to grow. And there's some places where all of the soil is like, I don't know if you know, there's something called an alluvial plain where like the topsoil is like six feet deep. Yes. And I guess a lot of Argentina is that way, which is why the grass is so great and the beef is so good.
Right. Someone was just explaining this to me. Yes.
Actually, Silicon Valley is actually an alluvial plain, by the way, which is why it used to be all orchards here. But nonetheless, you know, you want to find like the really fertile. You even want to find the alluvial plain with extra Miracle-Gro. You can find that. I mean, that's kind of what happened to Peloton, if you think about it. It's like you had this great thing, and then somebody poured a ton of Miracle-Gro and the business just exploded.
Yes.
And so, I think that's what I would say you look for.
But that being said, how did you get into health then, based on your background?
So, yeah, I knew nothing about insurance. I knew nothing about fintech, and I knew nothing about healthcare. Unfortunately, you know, that's the other part. Everybody always says, you know, find your mission in life. I'd actually say sometimes your mission just finds you. And so, in fact, that might be the best way to find your mission, is just keep your eyes open. What So we sold the company to Google. Okay. It closed on a Friday in August. I think it literally was August 20th, I want to say. And I remember that date because it burned in my memory. And August 21st, I was running a 10K race. And, you know, I had run in high school. Like I was a cross-country runner and track athlete. But, you know, I had gained a lot of weight over the years. And I still ran, but I wasn't really running very fast. And I ended up with chest pains and ended up in the ER. So I was 37 at the time. My father had his first heart attack in his mid-40s. It didn't end up being a heart attack, although it was something significant. And I just said, okay, I guess, you know, this is my wake-up call. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, I still remember the first thought I had when I was having those chest pains in the middle of that run is somebody asked me, they're like, were you scared? I'm like, actually, I was more mad. And he's like, what do you mean? And I was like, I just worked this whole 10 years, finally gotten to this financial goal I had had as an entrepreneur, and this kind of symbolic goal. You sold your company to Google, like in Silicon Valley. That's this form of, you know, kind of graduation. And then I'm like, and I'm going to die? I'm like, this is not fair.
Oh, yeah.
This is absolutely not fair. And
good point.
and so that was the first thought that went through my head, which is maybe a little unique Silicon Valley thought. But
understandable.
But, you know, I've worked for a decade, right?
Yes.
And so then I changed my diet. I changed my exercise. I lost 30 pounds, which, and I'm only 5'6", so 30 pounds on me was actually a lot. And just, you know, learned a ton. I ended up taking some classes at the School of Medicine at Stanford in endocrinology and some other areas. And just, I loved it. I just found it so interesting. Oh. In fact, I remember thinking, God, had I found kind of this health science before, maybe I would have done that instead of becoming a computer scientist, because I just found it so interesting. And
fascinating.
And then I said, all right, if I'm going to build another company, it's going to be around health. And the last part was, it gave me a bit of a philosophy that Health IQ is built on too, which was, I remember when I was unhealthy, people would tell me to run and exercise and lose weight. You know, my mother would tell me, my wife would tell me, like, join the club. Mm-hmm. Everybody told me, but it didn't make me feel better and wanting to do those things more. It just kind of honestly made me feel bad about myself. And I was like, this is not motivating. And then, you know, so I realized, A, you know, a person just has to flip that switch themselves. And second, what you can use is an aspirational positive metaphor to, you know, incent them to do it. And that's what we do at Health IQ, right? We give cheaper rates to people who are health conscious, so we give them a financial incentive. But I just thought, we got to use this positive stuff. We can't shame them into taking care of their health or shame them into that. It just doesn't work. You know, it's not right, and it's just not effective. And so that was kind of what got me into health. And that's, I mean, I tried everything. I tried every diet, different ones. I tried intermittent fasting. I tried every workout type. I got a zillion different medical tests just for out of interest and curiosity in many cases, and just immersed myself in kind of a whole new sector.
And they're so different. So then was the thought the quiz would inspire people, other people to get better like you did? Was that the first thought?
So then the idea was, okay, we all realized, you know, health was two parts. It's the cards you're dealt with and which you can't really control. And, you know, obviously I didn't get very good cards, but it's also how you play the cards, which you can control. And I thought, okay, if we're going to price insurance, we kind of don't want to price it on the first part, because that's not in your control and that's kind of not fair.
Right.
But we do, but it is okay to price it on the second part. But there's no measure of that. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no tool that tells you, you know, how much responsibility you've taken for your health. And so we realized actually deep health knowledge is a reasonable proxy for how much responsibility you've taken, because you don't just bump into that knowledge. No. You have to have kind of acquired it. It had to become a hobby. And so we built the Health IQ test to measure that part, and it turned out to be a really useful tool to kind of assessing risk and assessing just personal responsibility. I always tell people, I'm like, in the end, really what Health IQ does, it separates out two groups of people. The group that say, yes, it's my life and my health, and I want to, you know, try to make it better, and I'm going to do what I can, from the people that are like, God will give me what God will give me.
Right, you know? Right.
Past the dessert. So, you know, I think there is this is a business built around kind of that philosophy.
That's great. And now you've delved into, you were saying, dementia with seniors and some other areas.
Yeah, you know, health is one of these things that affects so many things.
Right.
You know, and one of the things, you know, it's obvious why if you're health conscious, you'll probably end up being lower risk for life insurance and lower risk for health insurance. Like, mm-hmm. I don't, you know, most people get that.
Right.
But when it came to auto insurance, everybody was like, what? Like, I don't get it. What, you know, so you're health conscious, you're not a better driver. Like, you know, what is that? Turns out the most, if you look at accidents per 100 million miles driven, there are more accidents 65 plus than all the other ages put together.
Really?
Yeah. You think 16-year-olds are the risk?
I was just going to say my 16-year-old son, I would think. No?
Yeah. I have a 16-year-old son, too. And okay. It is scary driving.
Yes. But
I will tell you. Yeah.
The
car we gave him has this automatic feature on my phone where I can set the maximum speed.
Oh, so, yes. Yes. I know that app. Uh-huh.
I'm like, too. Thank God they've kids out of this feature.
Yes.
Yeah, he's like, no, I want this other car. I'm like, no, that car doesn't have that.
But
you think 16-year-olds are at risk, but it's really seniors with what's called MCI, mild cognitive impairment, which is early dementia, and that are actually most of the fatalities in the senior market and most of the accidents.
Sad.
And so, and you think, all right, but dementia is genetic and there's nothing you can do about it. Actually, turns out if you live a healthy lifestyle, you can cut your dementia risk in half, even if you have the worst genes. And so,
That's good news.
Living a healthy lifestyle makes a difference. I think health permeates more things than we think. There's a professor at Stanford whose research I help support, who does a lot of work in the gut biome and the gut bacteria, and you know why a healthy gut is one of the keys to overall health. But he was telling me the other day that 75% of the serotonin, the kind of happy chemical in your brain, is not made by your body. It's made by the bacteria in your gut.
Seriously?
And so quite literally, whether or not you're happy is partly the quality of the food you eat.
That I find that fascinating because I know so many people that struggle with gut health. You know, and it seems to impact so many assets, you know, parts of their life. And that just confirms it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that that's, so what you've seen at Health IQ is we're pulling on the thread of, you know, what are all the things that being health conscious affect in a positive way? And how can we kind of generate that financial benefit for our customers? You know, I think of it like home equity.
Mm-hmm.
You build this home equity over time. You've built this health equity. And all we're doing is unlocking it. You know, we're like the loan you take against your house once you've built up the home equity so that you can, you know, a HELOC, as they call it, right? And you kind of pull it out. And we're letting you use that money for other things. But you built it. You did it by running every day, or you did it by walking every day, or you did it by making good choices. You did it by even getting your checkup. You did it by taking your meds on time and making sure you were compliant with them. Like, all these little things make a difference. And those are the people we try to reward. And I mean, my other two companies were companies I built.
Right.
But I kind of knew I would sell at some point. This one I feel like is kind of my life's work. Like, I'm like, you know, I could see myself running it for 10 or 20 years. And actually, it's the only one that I would say was missionary, meaning the other ones, you know, it's cool tech. I really liked it. I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I started it. Uh-huh. This one, it found me, and it just has a much deeper meaning for me in terms of, you know, why I wanted to succeed and why I work, you know, even though I don't have to, I work day and night on it. So
that's so inspiring to hear. So you see yourself there for quite a while then, running this.
Yeah, I think everybody keeps seeing these overnight successes and think they're overnight. But if you actually look at it, what is it, like the average company to IPO is still like 7 years or 8 years.
Oh, exactly. Like, and look at your success. I mean, I think that was important to point out. You talked about 5 years and changes along the way. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it took 5 years for my first company, 5 years for my second company. Mm-hmm. This one's 7 years in. But this one's not bigger than my first two companies were. And I'm just seeing it through. You know,
further.
Yeah, it's almost like those I sold them at kind of adolescence, you know, versus this one I'm going to see all the way at least to adulthood and hopefully beyond. So
that's so great. And any, you know, I get this people say ask this. Any challenges you're facing right now with Health IQ? I mean, like, what are you working on, challenges? Other startup founders love to hear about, you know, what successful entrepreneurs are going through.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think a lot of the challenges are always the same. You know, they don't change. They just become different. But, you know, you always got to find great people to bring on the team, and you always got to convince them to join the team. I'm doing a call in an hour and a half with somebody to, you know, convince them to join our team. Like that just never ends.
That never ends.
Okay. But I think that some of the more unique challenges now we're seeing is, you know, in the early days of Health IQ, there were a lot of things we did that built the culture really well, but they were very physical, meaning you had to be in the office to feel them and to feel that impact of the culture. And now with COVID, with everybody being remote, we're trying to redesign some of those things that we used to do that were so unique, and some of them are not working, you know, virtually, like they're not having the same impact. And so I think some of the challenges are, how do you keep that connection? How do you keep that uniqueness? Mm-hmm. You know, and one of my friends described it best. She actually quit Salesforce and started at Google during the pandemic. And she said it was the weirdest thing. On Friday, I logged off and FedEx backed this laptop, and on Saturday, this other laptop came and I opened it up and I was at the same desk in the same place, just on Zoom, but just with different people.
That is so strange.
And that is weird, right? It's just like, yes. She also just was saying, but you know, I bet she hasn't bonded to her new company yet the way she had with her old. Like, there's just not that same connection. So I think we're figuring out how to do that, given our employees are all over. And, you know, I'm not sure what the future looks like, but I'm not convinced it's everybody back in the office like the old days either. So,
right. Interesting though that culture, recruiting, hiring are some of, you know, things that are always there. Like you said, they're the same issues that never go. Gosh, I could talk to you all day, but I need to let you go. So this has been so interesting. You know, you just have such great information. So thank you for being here.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
This was really fun. Thank you.
You've been listening to Startup Success. To make sure you don't miss out on future episodes, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. Like what you hear? Tap the number of stars you think the show deserves in Apple Podcasts. For more tools and resources for your own startup success, check out berklandassociates.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.